folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations for Friday, April 28th, 2017. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton, sitting in for Jeff Gamet, who's traveling this week. And joining me today, I have the one, the only, Mr. John Martellaro. John, thanks for taking the time and being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Awesome. We also have the esteemed Mr. Brian Chaffin. Brian, how are you today?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man.
Good to be here. Giddy up.
Giddy up. Yep. And we also have a sponsor this week. Listeners, for the fifth time this week, we'll know that is Elgato with Elgato Eve Energy. Elgato.com/TDO is where you can go to learn about that. And we will talk more about that later. But in the meantime, we do have a couple of stories to talk about. And the first is one that you kind of brought to the table, John, about how Apple is rumored to be making a Siri-based Echo competitor. What do you think about this thing, John?
I think it's hard to conceive of. Read the article at Apple Insider about how this fellow Sonny Dixon revealed to a reporter that Apple was working on a Amazon Echo-like device in the style of the cylindrical Mac Pro.
Sonny Dixon is a reporter, by the way.
Right.
Okay. So in terms of Apple trying to mimic or duplicate the Amazon Echo, I have several heartburn issues with this. First of all, it doesn't seem like a Apple idea to mimic a device that isn't selling that well. I wrote an article about a month ago about how in the December quarter, Apple sold 74 million iPhones, 10 million iPads, 5 million watches, almost 100 million devices. Oh, and 5 million Macs with Sierra. You add that all together, they all run Siri. In one quarter, in all of 2016, from the article I sourced, Amazon sold about 5 million Echoes. So what's the financial incentive? What's the motivation to follow Amazon's lead? What is the motivation to suddenly have a fixed device on a desktop when Siri is with you everywhere, with your in your pocket, with your iPhone on your wrist, with your Apple Watch? I don't quite see the business angle and the strategy angle.
Oh my God. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Brian.
Brian's getting ready to do a balderdash on me.
I know. In fact, I'm going to let him. Brian, you go.
I'm quivering with my desire to just scream wrong.
Balderdash.
Balderdash. That'll work too, man. Okay. 5 million Alexas in the U.S. That's roughly, I'm going to way underestimate this. That's 1 million households where Alexa is controlling electronics in the house instead of Siri.
You mean instead of HomeKit?
Instead of Siri.
Well,
it's like you're talking about the fact that where everyone's walking around with Siri in their pocket. Well, a lot of people I would hazard, I mean, who knows, but I'm guessing most people don't walk around with their iPhones in their pockets when they're in their house. They want to be able to walk from one room.
Furnace, they do.
Not if they have an Alexa, they don't. You know why? Because they're using Alexa.
Okay. If you're in the wrong room, then you got to buy a dot for every room.
All right, hang on. Here's the thing. A lot of people use, like many homes have both. In fact, there are three people here that have both Siri and Alexa in our homes, right? Oftentimes, the reason people use Alexa over Siri is because HomeKit, and John, you were very correct to point out HomeKit is the key to Siri connecting to your home, right? Siri does lots of things, but in terms of controlling things in your home, HomeKit's very, very limiting in terms of the devices that are compatible with it, whereas Alexa pretty much works with everything. So that compatibility limitation of HomeKit, and it's because of the way the security is built and all that stuff, is the issue there for many people. And the reason people that that have both wind up using Alexa. In terms of it being, John, I agree with you, though. You're right that Apple's whole paradigm is that these Siri-based devices are individual devices.
They're always with you.
But they're personalized, right? Alexa is this for everyone in the home to use. Siri is built completely the opposite of that. It's one Siri per person. And if you don't have your phone with you, that's fine. Apple happily will sell you a watch that keeps your Siri with you all the time. So while I'm sure Apple has conceived of this to see how it fits in their paradigm, I don't think that it would ever be a product that would see the light of day under the current path.
Maybe it was a prototype. Maybe it was a prototype.
Listening to the way you guys have talked about using, there are Alexas in my house, and I don't use them because I'm a freak and a weirdo, and I've got all kinds of baggage about all kinds of things. But listening to the way you guys talk about using your Alexas and watching my roommates use Alexa, for Apple, if Apple says that they want to be the center of our lives and they want to be with us all the time and occupy all these positions within our lives, for Apple not to bring some kind of home hub that sits and listens seems to me inconceivable. I'm way on the other side of the coin.
I think you're missing the point. Apple does have a home hub. It's called the Apple TV, right? And that device does sit in your home all the time. It doesn't listen because it doesn't need to. Siri, if I had to pick, somebody said, Dave, you have to choose Siri or Alexa, and then you cannot use the other one for 5 years. 100% I would choose Alexa just because of how open the platform is and how easy it is to integrate things with it.
And how insecure.
Yeah, well,
we haven't talked about security yet.
No, but it's a red herring. The only security that exists in HomeKit, the overwhelming security that exists in HomeKit, is geared only to protect your iPhone. It doesn't protect your Internet of Things devices from being compromised. Okay, that's a really important distinction to make. So while your phone is theoretically sealed off from any hackers, and I could even argue that that's not true, but that's the point of the security in Siri and HomeKit specifically. There is nothing about being HomeKit certified that said, and Apple has confirmed this to me directly.
Yeah, you've written about it.
Yeah, there's nothing in HomeKit security that says the device that is supporting HomeKit must therefore be secure in all these other ways. It only needs to be secure in the HomeKit path. And you could just leave, gaping holes open everywhere else, and you'll still get HomeKit certified. So security is a red herring if you want to wave that particular flag. That said, I would choose Alexa because it's so open. But Alexa is only at home. You don't have it with you when you're out. So if I were to choose the Alexa path, I couldn't tell my thermostat via Alexa to turn on while I'm driving home. But I can do that with Siri if I have an Apple TV in my house acting as that hub. Now, could Amazon change that and add, that functionality to the Alexa app on my phone and let me do it? Of course.
I suspect that they will.
Yeah, of course they could. And right. That's a software update. Like, no hardware needs to change whatsoever. But the thing is, when you do that, and this is the problem that Amazon's having with Alexa right now, if you've got multiple people in the house, everybody is dealing with the same Alexa profile. And I know that's not entirely true. You can kind of change profiles, but it's very limited in terms of how you can do that. So Apple's one assistant per person, as opposed to one assistant per household model, I just don't see why.
Actually, Dave, I think, though, that is the source of the delay. Or at the very least, it's part of the source of the delay. The why Apple hasn't already done this, why Apple has allowed Google and Amazon to get this big head start on them.
Yeah, Well, it's also the security thoughts.
You know,
is it going to make them a lot of money, Brian? Is it really going to make them a lot of money when they sell 100 million iOS devices per quarter?
Does you think Apple Watch makes them a lot of money, John? Do you think Apple TV makes them a lot of money?
Well, they sell as many Apple Watches in a quarter as Amazon sells Echoes all year long. So, yeah.
Do they really? Do they really?
Yeah,
do we really know that? Five million Apple Watches a quarter. But how many Apple TVs is Apple selling? The whole point is to build the ecosystem and to Apple has all these different layers of the ecosystem, and the whole thing is designed to feed into the whole. And it's not just about the huge numbers. And right now, Apple is ceding control of the house to other players. And that's what I can't see them being sanguine about.
But I think their security issue is a more limiting factor than the lack of a standalone device that sits in your home that listens to you. The whole issue with HomeKit is that you can't easily get all of your existing devices onto that platform because they have to be built with we call it the HomeKit chip, but that's not entirely correct. You could do it in software on an existing device, but generally the handshake takes too long because you've got to do this insane encryption that takes like 45 seconds for a non-specific HomeKit chip to do. So I really think the stumbling block, the roadblock to getting wider Siri in the home, aka HomeKit adoption in place, is the overarching security.
One of the things I think about in this process is the physical presence of the little black cylinder. Siri is disembodied, right?
Yeah.
It's just this voice in the sky that's hard to associate with. I think there's a psychology associated with this, that you've got a monolith, a device that you can look at and handle and talk to and feel.
You can handle your phone. You can handle your watch.
But Siri is just this voice in the sky. Oh. You know, Alexa sits there. It's kind of cute. It has this physical, meaningful presence. It could be that Apple, if anything, is trying to combat that consumer psychology before Echo takes over that aspect of our lives.
All right, we're gonna wrap this up with a question, Brian. Within the next 18, I'm gonna say 24 months, although it's really hard to look that far ahead. But I'll say it anyway. Within the next 24 months, does Apple release a standalone Siri based Alexa like object? Okay.
100%. And I'd be willing to make a bet on that.
All right, Mr. Martellaro, your answer to that same question?
No. It's hard to estimate a probability the way Brian did, but I would say 5%.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't allow my inability to actually do it stand in my way.
I didn't ask. I asked a binary question. And so Brian's answer is yes. John's is no. Mine is also no. We shall see what happens.
Speaking
of HomeKit. Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah. Right. Good call, Brian. Send us an email, observations@macobserver.com, or tweet us at TMO Daily so that you can tell us what your thoughts on that. Binary answers are requested. I have no control over what you'll actually give us. So there you go. They are not mandated. They are simply requested. We will interpret all answers to be binary, regardless of the form they take. All right. And while we're speaking about HomeKit, though, Elgato Eve at elgato.com/TDO is our sponsor for this week. And Eve Energy is both a switch and a power meter that knows what's going on with your appliances and devices. You can, of course, use this to control things. It's a switch, so you can live more comfortably by controlling it with Siri or an app, right? It's all totally baked in. It's HomeKit enabled, which means you get remote access so that you can get your home ready for your arrival when you're coming home. Of course, it does include HomeKit security, which keeps your phone safe, the communication between the two. But it also gives you some insights into your energy consumption, and you can see graphs right in the app that show you by day, by month, or by year, so that you can see what kind of energy your appliances are using, either in a very snapshot way or with a histogram, so that you can see what's going on over time. It's very, very cool stuff, and very inexpensive point of entry. So you got to check this out. Go to Elgato.com/TDO to learn all about Eve Energy, and you can even place your order right there. Our great big thanks to Elgato and Elgato Eve for sponsoring this episode and this week of TDO. The next topic that I have for you gentlemen and for you, all of our listeners, is this interesting development in the battle between Qualcomm and Apple. And Apple just stopped paying. Brian, you want to tell us about this?
Yeah, so Qualcomm, Apple, epic royalty battle. Apple doesn't want to pay what they are contractually obligated to pay. That's the brute honest truth of this. And but there's a reason for it. And there's the royalty rates that Apple is paying to Qualcomm are based on the total price of the device. And that model makes a lot of sense in the bottom feeding world of the open licensing. Right. But right. Apple basically says, hey, look, we're bringing all this extra value to market. And here's Qualcomm collecting all sorts of extra money that they haven't actually earned. Mm-hmm. So Apple ends up paying a lot more for the same chips than everybody else, simply because Apple is able to charge more for its products. So Apple argues that it shouldn't have to do so. And they want the terms, the royalty rates that they're paying to be lower. They want it to actually be, I think, either a flat fee or based on a different metric other than the final price. It might even be a total contribution to the value of the product. And if they could do so, obviously they'd be paying a lot less money. And today, Apple said, yeah, we're just not going to pay this anymore. So we're going to start withholding payments until the court decides how much we actually owe. Okay, thanks, bye. Okay. And Qualcomm says, like, nah.
So effectively, Apple is disputing this contract while simultaneously now also committing a breach of the existing contract.
That would be my understanding. I am not a lawyer, and right. I haven't even played one on TV.
No, but that's what it sounds like is going on. Unfortunately, Apple has a history of doing things like this. I remember years ago talking with someone who was making a piece for the first iBook, in fact, and they, negotiated a price for, what, 100,000 units of whatever it was they were making for them. They built a factory to do so, as happens, or they contracted to have the factory built and retooled, and you got to build the machinery to make the thing and the widget. And after they built the factory, Apple came back and said, yeah, that price that we agreed to pay you. Right. We're going to change that price. And also we only want 50,000 instead of 100,000. And the price is going to be lower. And the company actually bet like the whole farm. And as the story was told to me by the person who did this, the CEO sat down with or called Steve Jobs on the phone and said, no, we're not going to make your widgets if you're not going to take your initial order. And they knew they had Apple, in their
yeah, crosshairs. What's that, Dave?
What's that?
What's that phrase you're looking for?
Yeah, that's right. That's the phrase. They knew they had them because there was no way someone else was going to be able to tool up a factory this fast. But they said, no, it's 100,000 and this is the price.
And so I know that John's got stuff to say on this, but a couple more facts on this. So what Apple is doing is withholding payments to suppliers, but these are pass-through payments.
Okay.
Right. So they're withholding the payments to the suppliers. And so then the suppliers aren't paying Qualcomm. Qualcomm lowered its revenue estimates for the quarter because of this by, see, from 5.3 to 6.1 billion in revenues down to 4.8 to 5 6.6. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Billion. All right,
so they're just being
money.
Realistic about the fact that this cash isn't going to come in, even if they were to win this suit, and then of course the cash comes in the future. Yeah.
It comes in the future. It's a lot of it's a lot of money, and that sort of underscores Apple's point.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, but still, I mean,
I've seen this behavior before from Apple. It seems to me, in my opinion only, Apple seems to get a little bit annoyed when other people flourish on the coattails of Apple's success.
Oh, well put. Yes. Yeah. Steve hated the fact that developers got to make money off of Macs without Apple making money off of it. And he fixed that with the apps on the iPhone with the App Store. Right. Totally fixed that.
Fixed. That's right. Yeah. That's a fixed system. All right. So, yep. That's very interesting.
They signed a contract. They're getting good product. They're making money. Yep. They should pay up. I kind of side with Qualcomm on this.
Well, unless there's something about the contract that Apple can prove legally in court and get a ruling. But again,
these contracts have been in place for years.
That's the thing. It's like decades. If you want to renegotiate, you shouldn't bringing a judge into a renegotiation ain't cool. and judges tend to understand that. Like, is there some legal grounds for your beef here, or do you just want to renegotiate your contract and the people on the other side didn't want to renegotiate the way you did? Because that's two different things, and judges will throw that stuff out.
I know you're going to yell at us about time, Dave, but don't fret over the poor.
Well, Brian's Skype connection is making it such that I can just wrap this up with no problem whatsoever and no guilt either. So thank you very much, Brian, for coming on the show. I don't know if you'll hear this, but I'm saying thank you to you anyway. And John, thanks for coming on the show. Good stuff.
You're very welcome. It was fun.
Yeah, man. All right. And of course, Elgato at elgato.com/TDO. Thank you so much for being our sponsor. We will see you next week.